Thank you. So I want to first of all thank Mary and the other people who put this together, and thank you for the nice introduction, Mary. We've seen from the previous presentations a couple of takeaway points that I think relate to what I'm going to talk about. One is some of the examples in the first presentation remind us that significant changes, that communities aren't stable places, that significant changes can occur for a number, stemming from a number of sources. It could be as a result of natural disasters like we saw, influx of new populations. You mentioned also gentrification. Oh, it's not showing? Okay. But that's okay. I'll get started while you do that. Gentrification, economic development leading to displacement of residents, particularly lower and working class residents. So it's not working? Okay. And then in Marla's presentation, we saw that in New Orleans after Katrina, the process of recovery and the impacts of recovery were different for different population subgroups and different geographic areas of New Orleans. And then in Tom's presentation, we see again the all over the world. Oh, how fun. Okay. But I'm going to be able to see it here, so at least that will help me. And I'll tell you what I'm looking at. So consequences of substance use are not equal across groups. They're not equal by location either. And there's an interaction in that. So this is something, it reminds us of the complexity of really understanding what goes on in place and how place can impact different populations differently. And the issue of violence density, also that you presented by, we see here that we can distinguish by smaller geographic units, which is actually very useful when we're turning our eye to actually doing something about the problem, not just describing it, because it cues us to the fact that there are differences in these smaller units in what Boston call hotspots that perhaps could be intervention targets, and that we really need to get more granular in our understanding of place. Okay, let's see. This is going to be fun. So here, I was going to show you something actually you've all known. You know, you've seen the WHO and IOM graphic of determinants of health, right, with the concentric circle. So, okay, thank God you know what that one looks like.
It's
so
a beautiful rendition.
It's a very... So we know that life opportunities, including a healthy life, are really largely determined either directly or indirectly by the communities we live in. I mean, you know, when we all go to buy a house or rent a place to live, right, that's what we're looking at. We want environments that are really good for our families and for our children. We know that the features of where we live, work, play, et cetera, really shape our life opportunities as well as our liabilities. And so we now know this from all of the years of research on social determinants of health. So we have made great strides in describing the impacts of social determinants of health, even how place or features of place to some extent impact health. But we're only beginning now to craft and test approaches that actually intervene on the impact of place on health, trying to intervene on place in many different ways, and I'll talk about that in a minute. So I feel that, you know, as a result of the moment where we're at, this is really, we're at the forefront and of contemporary public health discourse that is really beginning to explore what does geography really mean and the complexities of that. And the big question you know, and I often ask social epidemiologists who can describe beautifully the problem, and I'll say, okay, so what do we know about what are the best levers upstream to intervene on? And they do like what I just did, you know. And so we don't really know a lot about that, but I think we do need to turn much more of our attention from describing the problem, even though there are issues there still, you know, but social epidemiologists could forever be describing the problem. But so those of us who are interested more in application, we need to really turn our attention to how do we turn that then into interventions that can be theoretically sound, conceptually well-formed, and testable. So I think that is our big challenge. So now you were going to see another beautiful graphic showing, the iceberg, right? It's one of the versions of the iceberg that shows that at the very top, most responses to health inequities have really focused on diseases and unhealthy behaviors. Those are the visible manifestations of inequities. And underneath, what we have really yet to significantly focus on are the daily living conditions like housing, employment, social support, crime, safety, etc. And underneath that, economic and social structures like taxation avoidance, unfair trade, etc. at larger levels. And, you know, these are issues that have been highlighted by others. So knowing what we know, and I'm not going to review it all because you're all familiar with the social determinants of health literature, but knowing what we know, we really have to look at, be thoughtful about what we mean by place-based. When I read some of the literature on community interventions or what people are calling place-based, some of it is still very individual behavior-focused. So we haven't, we could say that our approaches for prevention and health promotions are kind of still catching up with what we know about social determinants of health, and that we're just really at the beginning of trying to think about what does that literature mean in terms of intervention. So, you know, and I have reflected on my own work, which has largely been on individual level interventions, family level interventions in the treatment of addiction, mental health, some HIV. When I reflect back, I realized that for many years we were all, of us working on this in the city, pretty frustrated with, even though we're making great progress and people were, you know, getting treatment and we could show that our approaches were efficacious. Nevertheless, these people who were in our studies or who were our patients in our clinics were returning or continuing to live in the communities that were very much at the root of the reasons for their problems. And so one has to say, well, how could an individual level intervention or even a family level intervention or treatment hold up against the daily toxic environments that many people have to live in? So here you were going to see a slide that you've probably seen before that, with the quote, why treat illness and send people back to live in the same conditions that make them sick in the first place? And I think that's kind of what we do often, not just in treatment, in medical care, but sometimes also in public health. So the women we were working with and the men that we were working with in Boston for about 33 years lived in the communities. If, you know, I could show you the maps, the communities that where you see high infant mortality rates, the communities where you see high rates of HIV and sexually transmitted infections, of crime, of a feeling of lack of safety, you can go down the list. High school dropout overlap exactly with the populations we were serving. So those were the communities that's what the people we were working with had to deal with every day. So, Boston, and probably not unlike many other cities, is really a tale of two cities. So here you were going to see some pictures of Boston on one side, all the things that we see in the brochures, and then the other side, the pictures of some of the communities where our patients live. So we know that all these features, like neighborhood characteristics like disadvantage, physical and social disorder, alcohol outlets, etc. You know, the list goes on, you know what it is. Those are all associated with increased risk of substance use. In this next slide, and I was going to show you that there's some literature that supports the statements that I just made. Studies have documented that neighborhood disadvantage, for example, is associated with likelihood of drug use among adults, that close proximity to alcohol outlets in neighborhoods is associated with greater alcohol consumption, that poor quality of local environments like physical and social disorder and economic disadvantage is associated with injection drug use, and this is based on studies across over 88 metropolitan areas. Similarly, mental health, which was the other issue that work was focused on, studies show that poor quality of built environment is associated with depression in adults over and above neighborhood income levels and demographics, that neighborhood stressors like perceived disorder and violence, physical disorder, and decay is associated with decreased symptoms of depression in adults, and that social support is linked to decreased symptoms of depression in women. So I really wish you could see the next slide, because it shows... I put up the logos of all the organizations, both government and foundations, that have started to fund and pay attention to place-based initiatives. And so I think, resulting in part from the knowledge that we gain in social determinants of health, we've managed to sort of bring people's gaze on this issue, and there's an effort underway to develop place-based community initiatives. So usually these don't have a strong research component, but the Healthy Cities Movement, RWJ Healthy Schools Programs, the California Endowments Building Healthy Communities, Place Matters Initiative by the Kellogg Foundations, the Choice Neighborhood Initiatives by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, et cetera. And then recently, the newly launched, I think there's a session going on about it now, by RWJ and a number of other funders on Build Health Challenge to promote partnerships between community-based organizations, hospitals, local health departments, and other key stakeholders to try to intervene a bit more upstream. So, the question then becomes how. So the report on social determinants of health, just to summarize, highlighted three areas. One is make daily living conditions healthy and sustainable. Two, distribution of power, money, and resources. And three, measure and understand the problem and assess the impact of action and train the workforce. So, if you haven't looked at that in detail, I suggest you do, because I think it really provides some guidance. So this slide, I'm really sorry you can't see, but here I created a graphic with three overlapping circles. So I'm going to try and show, kind of describe it to you. One up here, one down here, and one down here. They intersect is the part I want to talk about. But this circle up here is really about the literature on theories of social determinants of health and the role of place. And contributors to that literature have come from sociology, psychology, and public health, among others. Then over here we have measurement, all the social epidemiology, the contribution by geographers, anthropologists in terms of thick description of place, and then over here the approach to place or community intervention literature. And what I found, which has come largely from psychology and public health. So even though we want to think that we discovered in public health, you know, community-based intervention psychologists have been doing it for a while, but in, you know, under different kind of different contexts. But the point is that the challenges are really how to bring these together in reviewing and how to train, how to put teams together that have all the skills and how to train our students and the workforce in these skills, because that's what's going to take to translate what we know, develop new knowledge, and then translate them to evidence-based, place-based implementation. So I think there are future challenges is the last thing I want to talk about based on what we just said. But some of the fundamental questions, for example, before I go there, I want to say that in reviewing that literature, those three kind of overlapping, partly overlapping circles or spheres that I described tend to be published in different places by people of different disciplines, and they don't tend to be informed by each other. This is a real problem, and I think one that we really need to address, and it points to how we need to train the workforce and our students differently. So the future challenges. So some of the fundamental questions, and I'm sure you can think of others that remain, through which mechanisms do community-level factors impact health directly and indirectly? And for which conditions and populations? We really don't know a lot about mechanisms. And I know social epidemiologists is still trying to work on that. Did the sound just change? Okay. Okay. Well, I'm just going to continue because... Okay. So that's one. What are the mechanisms through which community-level factors impact health directly and indirectly? It may vary by conditions, health conditions. There may be some that impact a variety of conditions. Those would be ideal for targeting. And for populations, as we heard, some of the underlying conditions may impact different populations differently. Secondly, what are the most effective, feasible, and sustainable intervention approaches for improving population health in varied community settings and for varied health outcomes? So even if we know theoretically or have some evidence of the empirical mechanisms, we still don't know which are the most effective, feasible, and sustainable, because really we're like just in baby steps in terms of really upstream place-based research. Third question, what changes are needed in data systems to assess effects of community-level interventions? So if we're going to assess population-level health changes, we need to make sure that we're collecting the data that can be geocoded to the right level on some of those health outcomes, or we won't be able to gauge that. So what changes are needed in those? And then how do we prepare the workforce to work in interdisciplinary teams, develop, test, and implement place-based approaches? So some of the other challenges that I saw in looking at this literature is the issue of definition. So place-based can mean settings, specific settings like the work, the school, a local geographic area, for example. Usually the studies focus on one specific health issue, but what I noticed is that the definition really varied what was meant by place-based. Sometimes it refers to, and here are have references of people who also talk about this. Sometimes it's just that the intervention you're doing happens to be in a community, but it really is still very individually focused. Second type is a target change. Community or setting as the target of change. So that is, the aim is to create healthy community environment in a systematic way using population level indicators. Sometimes community based or place based is used to talk for work that's really about that sees the community as a resource, and the aim is to marshal the local resources to address a specific issue. A lot of times these projects involve, like the ones I mentioned, significant money from the outside, significant input from external agents like foundations or the federal government. And then fourth is the community as change agent itself. These tend to be more empowerment type based intervention approaches. So we mean many different things. There are other typologies that people have described, but clearly this is something we need to work on. And we need to look at whether we're really putting a new name on an old strategy or whether we're really reconceptualizing what we're doing. We need to improve theory of relationship between place and health. I already talked about mechanisms, pathways, and targets, but you know, other authors have pointed to the reciprocal relationships between people and place. Place affects people, but people also can affect place. And so the characteristics of place, especially in a social dimension, can be shaped by people as well. And that, you know, we need a theory that helps us to understand how the role of place may vary by different types of settings, different types of places, characteristics of the place, compositional characteristics, social characteristics, the specific health outcome, and life stage. We really need improvement in evaluation and research on efficacy of interventions. A lot of the interventions have either a what's called place-based or community-based interventions have really been lacking. They're often process-focused. They don't tell as much about outcome. They're more descriptive, and they tend to suffer from poor designs. Often there's a theory of change inherent in the intervention to justify the intervention is lacking, or it's not well matched to the intervention elements. The mechanisms of change are rarely measured or tested. And, you know, we have to struggle with the methods that we're going to use and the study designs, because randomized clinical trials may not be the best design. It's, you know, due to the scale, the cost, and we also need to look at designs that allow us to look at longitudinal impacts, because place-based interventions are not likely to have immediate impacts. It's something we're going to need to observe over a period of time. I talked about before the lack of, or, you know, we need to reevaluate our community-level data systems, but in terms of health, these are really lacking, really at the community level. And then the number of authors have pointed out the need to develop measures for things that we're interested in, like measuring really the features of context, how empowerment can be measured at the community level, et cetera. And then there are questions related to timing, intensity, and length of interventions, as well as sustainability. And then the final area that I want to talk about, again, is what does this all mean for creating place-based intervention teams that have the capacity to create well-theoretically grounded place-based interventions with good methods and good evaluations, and the ability to really implement and work with communities to implement these. So I think there are some obstacles that we experience because of the silos that we still continue to have. And as reflected in the literature, when you look at it, the different disciplines really come at it from different perspectives, and they don't intersect well. So we need models for training the workforce on place-based theory, methods, and evaluation. So really the goal of my presentation was to kind of summarize a bit and encourage you and hope you encourage others. We're very interested in having the journal be the place where people want to bring their research on these kind of innovations that we need from theoretical, methodological, and implementation level. We do want to hear about what you're doing. We want real, authentic, place-based thinking to be reflected in the journal, as well as models for interprofessional workforce training in terms of preparing our workforce to deliver on this promise. Thank you.
Well, what a model of grace under pressure. Thank you, Hortensia. Thank you, everybody. There are actually a number of our team members here. You might not necessarily know them in their guise as supporters of the journal, but would you please stand if you're on the AJPH staff, if you're on the editorial board, if you're on the editorial team. You can see what a supportive group of people that we have. And because of a few little glitches, we didn't have as much time as we would have liked to introduce everybody, but I can't thank you enough. Just a few themes that shone through for me. Each and every one of you is so authentic. Oftentimes you're at a presentation and you see people who are just getting used to a topic. These people have depth, they have experience, and they have unbelievable commitment to what they're doing. So I can't thank you enough for that. Then finally, even though we say we need to work across disciplines, you've already been doing it. And it might be that you come at it from the planning side, or you come at it from all of your years doing individual-based interventions. I was doing work in Harlem, and finally I thought I had reached nirvana when one of my nurses said, I really can't release my child patients back into the homes where they live. And I said, Sandy, we're there. So I want to thank you all, and we have a few minutes for any questions, or just come up to us and talk with us about anything that's important to you. Thank you all for being here. This was an extraordinary session.